Dr. Janet Levitin, thank you for joining me today for this interview.
Thank you for having me, Ty.
You bet, you bet. And now you work with Dr. Tenpenny up in the clinic in Ohio, correct?
I do. I've been with Dr. Tenpenny at the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center for the last 4.5 years or so, but I've been a pediatrician for many years. I had my own solo private practice in Boston, Massachusetts for 25 years before that.
Okay, so you've been around pediatrics for a while.
I've been around pediatrics since 1982.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what I would like for you to share is just your personal experiences of, you know, I see that you saw several children die from what they called SIDS after being vaccinated and how that impacted your practice.
I did. Well, from the time that I went into medical school, I didn't feel like I really bonded with conventional medicine that well. I always had a eye toward the alternative, and I didn't like all of the drugs and medications, the antibiotics and steroids that were used, so I knew I wanted to do something alternative. When I got through all of my training, and I subsequently did become a homeopathic pediatrician. And one of the things that did shape my thinking was early in my career, I saw 3 babies die of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, within 24 hours of being vaccinated. It wasn't like everybody who was getting vaccinated had SIDS, but every SIDS case that I ever encountered had, the baby had just been vaccinated within the last 24 hours. And I knew in my heart that something was wrong. I just knew that something was wrong. Of course, back then there wasn't internet in common usage, and so you couldn't really go study things through an internet. You had to try to go to the library and get a book and try to find out some information. But I knew on an intuitive level that something was wrong, and there were a couple of books out back then as well that also confirmed that.
It's sad, speaking of SIDS, one of my wife's best friends, her first child, born in the late 80s, died of SIDS. He was just vaccinated. And they told her that he had cried to death.
That he had cried to death?
He had cried to death. That he cried. And so she, to this day, still bears the guilt of remembering hearing him cry and not going to comfort him. She thinks that she killed her son, that she caused him to die because she didn't comfort him when he was crying. Never mind the fact that he was just vaccinated. Just that didn't have anything to do with it, right? We don't know what caused the SIDS, but it wasn't the vaccine. That's the mantra, isn't it?
Right. Well, the baby was vaccinated. That's probably why the baby was crying. So the baby didn't die from crying. The baby probably died from the effects of the vaccine. Well, I knew right then and there that something was wrong. Early in my practice, I did do some vaccinations, but I didn't do them under 6 months of age because I knew the main window of SIDS was 6 months of age and under. And I would offer them as an elective procedure to people, like you can choose this or not choose it. We would do one at a time, spread them out, do the ones parents wanted, not the ones that they didn't want. And that was my approach to it because I always viewed it as an elective procedure. Mm-hmm. I mean, subsequently, as it came around, when they introduced the hepatitis B vaccine for one-day-old infants and then the chickenpox vaccine, I just said to myself, I'm never going to give those vaccines as a routine, and I don't really agree with the whole vaccination schedule as it is.
Right.
So I just, at a certain point, decided to stop vaccinating in my practice, which has worked well for me.
That's what I was going to ask you. So what have you seen as comparing before and after you stopped vaccinating? What do you see as far as the health of the children?
Well, I feel that the way I did the vaccines back in those days, children that were in my practice, I believe they were quite healthy because, once again, many people did choose to not vaccinate, and some people just chose selected ones, like maybe vaccines that covered meningitis or a serious illness. Another point to be made is that the vaccine schedule has ramped up so much. I'm sure in these series of interviews you're covering the 1986 law, the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which shields vaccine manufacturers and physicians administering vaccines from being sued if there's a negative outcome. So the vaccine schedule since that time has just ramped up. There's no liability. So we've seen like 10 vaccines added into the schedule. Back in the day when I was first starting out, it was a DPT, it was an MMR, and it was a polio vaccine. So just way fewer vaccines than we have now.
I think that's all I got. When I was a kid, it was DPT, or I don't think it was combined at that time. I don't remember.
Probably was combined, but I don't know how old you are.
I'm 48.
You're 48.
So I was vaccinated I was born in 68, so first couple of years I got a few vaccines.
Yeah, and you probably had DPT, you would have had polio, and you would have probably had the MMR.
Yeah, I think that's all I had. And, you know, and now we look at kids, I mean, multiple doses, multiple vaccines. The list is getting bigger and bigger and bigger of recommended vaccines or mandatory vaccines.
Well, the event that really disturbed me to my core was when they introduced the hepatitis B vaccine for one-day-old babies. Now, if you think about hepatitis B, how do you catch it? You catch it from having sexual contact with an infected person. You catch it from sharing needles with an infected person. Or perhaps if you're working in a lab and you're handling body fluid and you get a needle stick, that's another way. So what justification is there for a routine policy of vaccinating all one-day-old babies with a hepatitis B vaccine? I mean, I really challenge anyone to give me a medical justification for that, and they can't.
So, that, yeah, many people have commented about the absurdity of the hepatitis B vaccine for an infant.
Yeah, I mean,
the last person we interviewed, Dr. Sean Centers, he made the same comment.
I mean, you only need about a sixth-grade level of logic or so to understand that it's just absolutely unwarranted. So that really disturbed me very much, and it's really pushed on people, I'm sure, as you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were our youngest daughter was born when we lived in Panama, and they would not give us a birth certificate until she got the hepatitis B vaccine.
Did you say born in Panama?
Panama, Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And in Panama, it's mandatory that everyone that's born gets the hepatitis B vaccine. And they wouldn't give us a birth certificate unless we did. But we would not give her the Hep B vaccine. It took us 3 days of arguing with the authorities there to get the birth certificate so we could get a passport so we fly home.
Wow.
She was born there.
Wow. Well, they're holding people hostage with these type of mandates.
Yeah.
In different ways and in different countries. It's,
yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, they're holding people hostage. Not only that, but they're impinging on people's rights. Like, for instance, in California, the mandatory vaccination laws there, then your right to education is foregone. If you're not vaccinated, you can't get educated.
That's right. I mean, people have to choose between accepting a set of procedures that they don't agree with, or homeschooling, which, of course, not everyone can do, or moving out of the state. I mean, if you think about it, some people have the means to do homeschooling, and some people have the means to move out of the state. It really is a form of economic racism, if you think about it, because people who don't have the means to do that are going to have to submit to this procedure.
Yeah.
And it's very unjust.
Yeah, I agree with this. We just had the same comment a few interviews ago by an attorney.
Yeah, I was just at a lecture on eugenics, and it's, you know, you start thinking, is this a form of population control? Are we trying to target people and injure them or get rid of them?
Those are good questions to ask. Because, you know, the reality is there's got to be something that's driving these decisions. Now, we know that money is driving a lot of the decisions.
The almighty
too.
Dollar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, we know that that's at the core, I think, of a lot of these business decisions, because we're dealing with businesses, we're dealing with publicly traded companies.
Well, we are.
But, I mean, to me, I think that the main issue, that it really comes down to choice. The parents' right to determine what's best for their child, the fact that we are all endowed with intelligence that we're not allowed to use. We're not allowed to think, right? We're told, you do this. You don't have the freedom
that's
to think,
right,
to choose. And I think that's at the core of everything right now. It's just the freedom of choice in medical practices.
Right. Well, it's all well and good, yes, if you want to take vaccines. But if you don't want to take them, should you be forced? So, you know, just going back to my own experience, there have been, you know, ramifications for me professionally for making the decisions that I've made, because choosing to not vaccinate on the schedule. I used to be affiliated with Children's Hospital Boston, which is a very conventional institution. And they have a program where pediatricians out in the community can bring medical students into their office and sort of mentor them for a couple of days. It's really only a couple of days a year. But of course, I would be talking to my patients about my philosophy and the way I do things in front of these medical students. So after a while, word got back to the powers that be over at Children's Hospital Boston that I wasn't vaccinating on the schedule. So the first thing they did was to call me up and say, tell me that they didn't want me participating in that program anymore of mentoring medical students, because, hey, they didn't say it in this way, but it's like, we don't want our medical students hearing an alternative philosophy or hearing a different point of view. So, mind you, it's not that I was forcing anybody to not vaccinate on the schedule. Parents were coming to me with their children because they wanted to not vaccinate on the schedule. I was offering an alternative. There's certainly 1,001 pediatricians out there who would, you know, vaccinate them, you know, by the guidelines. So I stopped having these medical students in my office. So the next thing that happened was the next time, every year or maybe every 2 years, you have to re-credential with the hospital so that you can be on their roster, so that your patients can go in there if they're sick, and so that you can be affiliated with insurance companies and the patient visits can be covered. So they told me they weren't going to allow me to stay on their list of affiliated doctors because of this issue, which would mean that I couldn't be affiliated with Blue Cross Blue Shield or some of the insurance networks. So it was really a form of marginalizing me, blacklisting me for this choice that I had made.
Sure.
So there's ramifications for doctors who are making these kind of choices.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
financial ramifications, your reputation.
Being slandered, being maligned, lied about, you name it.
That's right.
We see that a lot in the cancer industry. I've seen that a lot, but I'm now learning about physicians like yourself that have been maligned because they chose not to vaccinate in their practice. And it wasn't that you were trying to even preaching to everybody else, don't vaccinate. You just chose not to, and people were flocking to you, but we can't have that.
Right. And that was actually at the time when I still did some vaccinations, just not on the schedule. I was kind of doing it for people the way they wanted to have it done.
Right. So there was no freedom of choice.
Well, there was a price to be paid for freedom of choice.
Okay, price to be paid. So the persecution, the suppression of information, this is not what we typically think of being, this type of behavior being acceptable in the United States.
The United States of America, where we're supposed to have our freedom.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as I can see it, things are really going in a negative spiral. I mean, I feel much worse for parents than I do for doctors, because a doctor's one individual, but you're treating lots of families, and people are getting marginalized and blacklisted and threatened with, you know, we're calling Child Protective Services because you're not accepting this hepatitis B vaccine or whatever it is. And people are having to try to find different ways to fly under the radar. But I think those type of strategies, if the powers that be want to start suppressing that more, they're perhaps going to find a way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, as I see it, we just need a groundswell of people saying no to mandatory vaccines and these mandates.
Right. That was the slogan back in the 80s with Nancy Reagan.
Right.
Just say no to the war on drugs.
Drugs, yes.
So now the war on vaccines, just say no.
It takes a large group of individuals, though. Yeah,
well, that's why we're in the process of doing this documentary, is because to get this word out to the people. But yeah, we just interviewed, just thought about this, an attorney named Allison Fomar. She's the attorney for Marianne Gabaldo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but child taken from her by CPS, drugged against her will, raped, I mean, just horrible. But she said that she's seen cases of children that have been taken from the families because they've been behind on the vaccine schedule, and they'll take them and catch them up all at once. I mean, what kind of insanity is that to take not only one dose, but maybe 5-10 doses of vaccines all in one day to catch them up on the schedule?
Well, actually, a typical 2-month-old baby will be getting as many as 9 vaccines at once. I mean, it may not be 9 injections, but it's 9 vaccines.
At once.
They can be getting a hepatitis B, diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, polio, Haemophilus influenza B, pneumococcal, rotavirus, and I might be missing one. Like
in a 2-month-old.
In a 2-month-old, yes.
And we don't know how those vaccines are going to react, not only with the child, but together.
No, we don't. We don't know.
So then how can we still believe this mantra that vaccines have been proven to be safe?
Well, that's a big question, and I think many people are deciding that they don't believe the mantra that they're safe. But you were asking about children and the health of children, and children are not what they used to be. When I first started out my practice, children had normal health. They had normal mental function. They were normal children. Many children are not what I would consider normal. Today, and by normal, I mean their health is not normal. They have so many challenges. I mean, it's just accepted nowadays that children are going to have allergies. It's accepted that they're going to be in speech therapy and occupational therapy, and that they're going to need all these therapies and this need, you know, IEPs, individualized education plans. It's just accepted that that this is normal. It's like the new normal is that your kid is sick. One of the things I learned in my studies is that allergies were unheard of before the invention of the hypodermic needle. Allergies were not even a known phenomenon. So you think about hypodermic means under the skin, so you're taking a substance, it's coming through a needle, it's going under your skin into your body in an unnatural way, not entering through the nose or the mouth. And this is the genesis of the birth of allergies.
There were no allergies before the hypodermic.
I don't know if I would say there was none, but
I read
a very interesting book called The Peanut Allergy Epidemic. Do you know of that book by Heather Fraser? Well, Heather Fraser's own son, Heather Fraser was a historian. She wasn't a medical person, but her own son, when she first gave him a peanut at around the age of one, he had an anaphylactic reaction, and she didn't understand why her son was allergic to peanuts the way, of course, many other children are as well. And she did a deep dive into the research and wrote this book, The Peanut Allergy Epidemic, which has so many references, very well researched. And she uncovered the fact that the HIV vaccine, the Haemophilus influenza B vaccine, which is one of the vaccines that's given for meningitis and invasive bacteria that can cause, you know, other illnesses. And I don't make light of Haemophilus illnesses because they can be very serious. However, they're typically rare and uncommon. Anyway, she discovered that there's a couple of issues. One is that they use oils, including peanut oil, sometimes in adjuvants of vaccines. So one, some of the ingredients can be peanut or other nut-containing oils. And of course, these things are trade secrets. They don't just, you know, disclose that so easily.
Well, that makes sense about the peanut allergy then.
Yeah, but also the HIB bacterium, the molecular weight and the molecular structure of some of the proteins in that bacterium are very similar to that of a peanut. So there's a cross-reaction. So here you are taking this injection, a series of four injections over time, and your body's mounting this immune response that is, you know, supposed to go on, and the inflammation and all of that. Then you eat a peanut, the body gets confused and thinks, oh, this is the thing I'm supposed to have a big reaction to, and then you have this, life-threatening or less than life-threatening reaction to a peanut.
That makes a lot of sense why there's so much peanut allergy.
And if you study it around the world, the peanut allergy started ramping up after the HIV vaccine came in. And when they've introduced that vaccine into different countries, you see the incidence of peanut allergy ramping up as that vaccine was introduced. So that's just one small part of the story. You could follow these type of issues with any vaccine or any schedule and see the connections. Of course, the connection with, you know, the rise in autism and all autoimmune diseases, asthma. I mean, things are very complicated because at the same time there's been the increase in, you know, genetically modified foods coming in kind of at the same time. One of the really interesting lectures I heard yesterday was about glyphosate. Glyphosate, also known as Roundup, and how glyphosate, I hope I'm saying this all correctly, but glyphosate will, when it comes into the body, it inserts itself where glycine ordinarily would, which is an amino acid that forms our proteins. So glyphosate is getting incorporated into proteins. These proteins form collagen, which is how gelatin is produced, and some vaccines are produced using gelatin. So basically we can be getting Roundup or glyphosate injected into us. So this is just extremely complicated and extremely dangerous as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Last question for you. As a pediatrician, right, you deal with children all the time. You know, just from an emotional perspective, how does it make you feel to see this next generation of children sick?
Well, Ty, it makes me feel hopeless. I feel despairing and hopeless because I see children, they're already affected by these influences. we can try to help them. To an extent, we can help some. We can't always help them all to as much as we would like to, but I feel sad, I feel despairing, I feel hopeless, and sometimes I just feel so upset when I feel like parents don't get it and they don't understand the connection and they didn't learn, they didn't educate themselves. I mean, the other point of view is, should they have to educate themselves? Should they be having to be the ones to dig out this information? Shouldn't they be able to trust doctors? But no, you can't trust doctors. They're part of, you know, the system. Many of them have financial kickbacks that they may or may not even be aware of for giving vaccines. It's a whole complicated, corrupt system. But I feel disturbed and upset by things. Mm.
But does it make you at least a little bit hopeful that by teaming up together that we can get this information out to the people that are uneducated, that maybe there's a chance?
Well, I do feel hope in spreading information. I love the movie Vaxxed. It seems to really be getting over. It seems to be penetrating to the people. And I love the fact that you're taking on this project. The truth about vaccines. We need more truth about vaccines. But I just feel very bad for damaged generation, another damaged generation.
I can't remember who it was that said this is a Holocaust.
Well, that's a strong word, but it's a Holocaust of its own sort. It's sort of more subtly applied. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're rounding up people and taking them away in a cattle car, but you're doing the same thing in a more subtle way.
I think her point was that it was Holocaust in the fact that we're doing this to helpless children that don't have a say in the matter. Well, we're going to continue spreading information as long as we can to keep waking up the masses. So, Doc, thank you so much for the time today.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it.